The following program is pre-recorded to air at this time. Welcome to Lotus Radio's weekly public service show, In Depth. To have your nonprofit featured, email psa@lotusradio.com.
We're joined this morning by Darcy Patterson and Austin Pollard with Wake Up Nevada. Good morning.
Hey, good morning.
Hey, good morning. Thank you, Mike, for having us.
Yeah, it's great to have you both here. It's Overdose Awareness Month, and we're bringing you guys on because you both have some very interesting and fascinating stories, and it's important that we listen and learn from your stories, and we'll get into why in just a little bit. But Austin, you've got a fascinating background. Former Marine, thank you for your service.
Thank you.
Director of Community Support at Reno Brewery District, Operations Manager at Downtown Reno Partnership, and Fitness and Nutrition Coach at Rise and Grind. You got your hands full.
Yeah. I stay a little busy, and then I also have a family, and I go to school full time.
So oh, my gosh.
Trying to manage having enough time in a day, but I figure if Oprah and The Rock can get it done in 24 hours, I can too.
Very well, Austin, I thank you for making the time then, because your story, from what I've read, has been fascinating. And I would love to hear where you started, where you've been, where you're going kind of thing.
Okay. Let me see. So I guess a lot of it all culminated to February of 2014, where I drove myself out to the middle of nowhere, and I intentionally tried to overdose on heroin. At that point in my life, I just reached the complete darkness. I burned every bridge, and I had no more purpose. And that happened after just steadily increasing my substance use. After I got out of the Marine Corps, I was prescribed pain pills. I also had issues with drinking, but pain pills wound up taking over because I didn't find myself as in trouble when I popped a couple pills and I was still able to function. It didn't take too long until those pills took over my life. And it went from just having a prescription where I would take a few of them and get rid of a few, to where I started buying more. And then I went down the dark road of learning how to doctor shop and doing whatever I could to just continue getting more and more pills. And ultimately, pills weren't enough. I moved on to heroin.
Do you mind, real quick, Austin, can I jump in and just ask, you know, if you don't mind my asking, what kind of pills were prescribed to start this road?
So my very first prescription was oxycodone, and that was straight from the VA. I believe they're 15 milligram straight oxycodone, and I remember taking that, and it just kind of blew me away, and it just kind of took over from there. I had a pretty large prescription for my very first prescription. I think I got 120 pills a month. And I was nowhere near needed that. I couldn't even take that many if I tried at that point. Eventually my body worked up a tolerance to where I could take more and more and more.
Now, is oxycodone, is that the Vicodin or is that the Percocet?
That's Percocet, basically.
Percocet. Okay, so then hydrocodone is the Vicodin, correct? Okay.
Yes.
And the reason I'm asking is because I know that a lot of people, I just got rid of some a couple of weeks ago, might have some in their medicine cabinet and not understand how powerful or how dangerous these can be.
Oh, yeah. Absolutely. And I mean, it doesn't really matter whether it's hydrocodone, oxycodone, fentanyl, any of them. They all create a dependence. And a lot of people think, oh, so I started popping pills and I got addicted, but it's a lot easier, than people think to happen. Mm-hmm. I've known people who went in for a routine dental appointment, just got some Vicodin for their tooth. 6 weeks later, they were trying to buy Vicodin on the street just because their body developed just a need for it. Same thing with a simple car accident. It's not something that just you plan on happening. It can happen just with the basic prescription, and then, you know, it can easily take over your life.
It is truly a powerful drug. In fact, just full disclosure, I had some back issues a couple of years ago, and I found myself maybe starting to go down a bad road, and it was very, very, it scared the hell out of me, quite frankly. But when a friend offered me $3,000 for my prescription of 100 pills, I was like, whoa, okay, time out. Something's wrong here, right? That's how bad and powerful these can be if not used properly or if a dependence is created, correct?
Absolutely. Yeah. Definitely.
So I cut you off there so we could kind of define what some of the pills were. We were talking about you had driven out and graduated from the prescription pills to heroin. How does that happen?
You know, I've never met anybody definitely who when they get into hard drugs, that was ever a plan or thought, you know, things happen. Basically, you draw a line in the sand, you erase it, and you move further and further. I got to the point where pills were not doing it. And then also just that how the pills took me down a path and the people I was associating with had access to these other things. And when pills weren't enough or I couldn't get pills, heroin was the next thing. I've never been somebody, I didn't like to smoke or anything like that. The very first time I did heroin, I went straight into my vein with it and it kind of took over from there.
Can I ask an ignorant question here? Because again, I'm having a hard time going from the pills to the needle, right? That's it, wrapping that in my head. Is it a cost thing? Is it a I can't get enough thing? How does that transition work?
I guess you have to understand the dependency side of things. When you develop a dependency for a substance, whether it's opiates or meth or something, your body doesn't feel normal without it. And a lot of times with substance use, you're not chasing a high, you're chasing a normal. You're just trying to feel normal. And when you withdraw from opiates, I remember the very first time I withdrew, I was completely just shaking and sick and throwing up and everything. And once you realize that you're withdrawing, that your body's doing this because you're not getting those opiates. It goes from wanting to take them to needing to take them. And then at that point, the things that you don't think you would ever do starts becoming, I guess, less important. You know, the only thing that matters is feeling normal. And that's why you find people just continuing to push themselves further and further and further, just to be normal.
So you found yourself in a position where you drove out and your intent was to die at the end of a needle, correct?
Yes.
What stopped you?
Nothing. I was found lifeless in my vehicle. Thank God somebody came by, found me, called paramedics. I woke up in the ICU and I reached the point with my drug use to where it started with opiates, but then I was getting to where I was injecting heroin and methamphetamine, which is kind of like the peak where not very many people make it back from that. And at this point in time, I did as much heroin as I could with the intention to die, but the meth in my system prevented my heart from stopping. At least that's what the doctor told me.
Wow.
And it was just a crazy experience. Waking up there in the ICU, I kind of freaked out. I would like to say that was the turning point. Like from that day forward, everything got better, but it didn't. That was February of 2014. I struggled completely throughout that year. I wound up relocating to Vegas. And this continued to go downhill. It wasn't until November where I asked my dad to help me. He took me to the VA and they admitted me. They put me into their detox psych ward and I had a complete psychotic episode. I wound up getting arrested at the VA. And I remember as I was in handcuffs being taken to Pahrump Federal Jail, thinking to myself that I checked myself in there to get help and here I am in handcuffs with another charge on my record. And if I didn't feel hopeless before, I definitely felt it then. And I was angry at the world. But you fast forward to December of 2014, that charge gave me an opportunity to go to rehab out in Fallon, Nevada to New Frontier Treatment Center. And that ultimately saved my life. The first 30 days there was the hardest ever. I should have been kicked out. But people saw something in me that I didn't quite see at that point. they gave me a chance. I wound up spending over 80 days there and taking advantage of their advanced recovery program and then staying here in Northern Nevada to change my life around. But it, ironically, it was that arrest that put me on a different path that really did help me out.
That had to be a hard phone call you made to your dad to ask for help. I got to imagine that was rough, huh?
It was actually the, I was so bad into things, and all I could think about was, I'm either going to die or my dad's going to die, and we'll never have a real relationship together. Mm. And it balled me up inside, and it killed me to think about that. And, you know, and my dad, well, I put him through some stuff, you know, and I hate myself for it. But I'm so thankful that he has supported me along the way. And I'm glad that he gets to see me where I'm at right now, and the relationship that we have. But he never gave up on me. And that was a really important thing for me.
That's pretty great. That's pretty great. Thank you for sharing your story. I want to come back to you in a few moments after we hear from Darcy, because Darcy's got another story to walk us through as we're here for Overdose Awareness Month. Darcy, what was your story?
Well, my story is my daughter, Kirsten Yamaoka, she started using early, she used pills that were somebody else's, Percocet. She was 15-ish and got caught up with some older guys and was using, smoking Percocet, crushing it up, and then went to heroin. Because it was definitely cheaper, easier to get. She progressed from there. We were in and out of rehabs. She went to New Frontier. She went to Vitality. She went to so many different rehabs, in and out of jail. Tried getting counseling, many family group therapy, a lot of different things that way, but it just never really stuck, because like Austin said, the dependence is just overwhelming. The fight to get drugs is tougher than anything they ever do. They'll do anything they can. My daughter did anything you can to get, the drugs, because your body needs it. Not like Austin said, to be high, just to stay normal and not sick, because the opiate withdrawal is very, it's a tough withdrawal. I've never been through it, thank God, but I watched my daughter several times go through it. It's a violent illness, like a violent flu is what I saw. Near in 2016, when in the summer of 2016, she had gone to Step 2, the program here in town, and she was doing really well. She was she had been sober for 6 months. And she had graduated the drug court program, and she had also obtained a job at UPS, which she really loved. And there's a little cottage that you can rent up at Step 2, and she had one of her own there. And she had bought a car that was new to herself. And things look great. Things look wonderful. And so we were very hopeful that, you know, that she would continue on that path. Thanksgiving of that year, we had the best Thanksgiving ever. Our family was really talked with distant family. It was really excellent too for my, and that kind of was like a precursor to what was going to happen for me and for her and our family. Just she, she was doing well. And I know that a lot of people, they get out of jail or they get out of rehab or they're doing really well. And it just takes, you know, one little mishap to really, you know, take them off course, get them out of their recovery, get them, you know, away from the people that are helping and, you know, back with the people who are hurting. So that's where we were in Thanksgiving. She actually asked me if I had baby pictures of her that day. And I said, yes, of course I do. And she said, oh, okay, just checking. So I thought that was very interesting and very odd, but it's kind of a foreshadowing for what was to come.
So what did happen?
Well, on March 1st, 2017, she died of a heroin overdose in her car in Idyllwild Park. She was 21 years old, and it was her birthday as well. She's a leap year baby, and it was her birthday that day. She was found by some kids that were in the park playing, and then of course they notified 911 and they had found her, and by herself, they say. But I have a different feeling of what happened while she was there. But ultimately, the end, the worst day of my entire life ever. I'm sorry.
No, please. I can't imagine what a day like that would be like, what it would do.
Mm-hmm.
And as we're talking this morning on Overdose Awareness Month, we're hearing stories from people who've actually been addicted to substances. And we've heard from the families who've been affected by the substances. And both are very real, very raw, very emotional stories in how we have gotten to the places that we are in our life. It's how Darcy has gotten involved with an organization called Wake Up Nevada. You probably wouldn't be involved, but for this, correct, Darcy?
Right. I definitely wouldn't be, but as soon as right after my daughter died, I just jumped right into advocacy in any form type. I reached out to the police department. I was doing webinars, just trying to get the word out, you know, on what's happening. You know, right now there's 222 people every day that die from some sort of overdose, mostly fentanyl now, laced with, you know, with other drugs, sometimes meth, sometimes heroin. And you know, that's too many. That's like one every 7 seconds. That's just unimaginable.
You mentioned fentanyl, and for those who don't know the landscape of prescription drugs or recreational drugs or any kind of drug for that matter, fentanyl has really become a household word in the last 18 months, 2 years, give or take. What is it?
Well, fentanyl has its own medical uses in a hospital setting. And that is a different type of fentanyl than what we're talking about. The fentanyl that we're talking about is made in China. It's synthetic. And then they are sending it to Mexico and they're lacing it with whatever other, you know, substance they want to lace it with, cocaine. It doesn't really matter. There's many things. Or they put it into pill form and they stamp it with like a Percocet stamp. And so it's just one tiny grain of that fentanyl, one tiny salt grain can kill you. It doesn't take anything, you know, it doesn't take a huge amount. It takes a little amount. And you would never know if it was in something that you were normally, you know, using.
So I want to add to it. And one of the reasons we see it just increasing is the cost of it. Since it takes such a very, very small amount to create the effect needed, it has allowed people to cut other substances and basically increase how much substance they have, bringing in more profit for them. And it makes it highly I can't even think of the word right now. Like it's not really measured on what's in what. So it hits the streets because it's a cheap way to get a better high. But it has obviously a deadly result to it.
Yes, exactly.
I'm sorry. I'm trying to wrap my head around and understanding if you know that it's that dangerous, but you guys are talking about getting to finding a normal. So I can't relate to that in that regard. I don't understand it. I can't relate to it, but you've both been in situations where it's that normal has been chased.
Yeah. I mean, my daughter was constantly chasing it because the normal keeps you from being sick. And that horrid, withdrawal. So just using to keep normal is a basic everyday, survival skill. And in any way they can do that, my daughter resorted to many things that were illegal, like stealing, just many things in order to get the money to pay for heroin to keep her normal.
And I guess one of the best ways to look at it, and it may be hard to understand, but when you think of like a life or death situation, for many people who are experiencing substance use and at the point to where their body's created a dependency, the mind is a very, very powerful thing. And it's almost as if your mind's tricking yourself as if you will die without it. And that in itself makes you capable of anything. I mean, people, when the fight or flight reactions kick in into your body, you're capable of doing anything, and it shuts down other parts of your body for thinking rationally. And when you're put in this situation where your mind almost tells you that you need it or you're going to die, you're capable of doing much more than you can ever imagine.
I appreciate both of your stories so tremendously. And I know as we're walking through Overdose Awareness Month, we had spoken before we went on the air about talking about prevention. And why that's so important is because per capita, Washoe County has more deaths than the rest of the state and nearly triple the national average. That's a big issue at that point, right?
Yeah, definitely.
So how do we prevent abuse? How do we prevent this from getting into schools, for example? I know that can be a big deal when raiding a medicine cabinet. What do we do for prevention here? I'm ignorant to that. I don't know what to do.
One of the biggest things and why I got into sharing my story is just talking about it. Let's be honest. Still at this point, when I tell somebody that I'm an IV heroin user, the facial expressions and the reactions that you get from a majority of people is still like it's such a taboo subject where that in itself makes people afraid to talk about it.
Right.
And if people are afraid to talk about it, they're definitely going to be afraid to ask for help. And the more you get past that and you talk about it and you make it okay to ask for help and you get rid of judgment, you get rid of expectations and you just hear people with where they're at, I think you can start creating more of a support network.
There is some absolute truth to sharing your story, whether it be with addiction, whether it be with mental illness or anything, taking away stigma from this is what opens up the conversation. Opening up the conversation is what leads to health, right? And if we had that access, perhaps we could prevent stories like any of ours from being there, right?
Yes, absolutely.
Yeah, absolutely. Definitely.
So let's say I'm a parent and I have three kids and I have been prescribed a prescription painkiller. What can I do to safeguard it?
Well, I think, kind of the obvious thing is, keep it out of reach where they can't get it, they can't see it, because someone may ask them to grab it from the, from the medicine cabinet. Also talk to your kids. Like we're talking about stories. You need to talk to your kids about the, you know, the dangers of prescription meds and, you know, what are they actually used for and how they're prescribed, as opposed to, you know, someone taking them and smashing them up and maybe smoking them. So I think, you know, sharing that, and if you have any issue with addiction in your family, that needs to be shared as well, because, you know, it is definitely passed on from generations, and they are more susceptible to becoming addicted.
You know, I don't want a
family member, my kids that I, you know, I put out there.
Whoops, I think we lost Darcy there. Gotta love modern technology, right, Austin?
Right.
So, yeah. Hey, real quick, before we run out of time, I want to make sure that we get to, you had mentioned earlier that it was a big deal, Narcan. I don't know what Narcan is. I don't know how to use it. Why do you use it? Or why would you need to, Austin?
Well, I wouldn't be talking to you if Narcan wasn't around. It's been used, I mean, multiple times. The first time when I intentionally tried to overdose, and then another time where I accidentally overdosed and the ambulance used it on me. Another example is some of my team members, they came across somebody who had overdosed down by the river, and we carry Narcan with us and we prevented that overdose. So, in short, it's to save lives. It's a very, very effective tool.
How does it work?
There's two different, I guess there's multiple different kinds. They have a nasal one where you just put it into the nasal cavity and spray. There's also one where it's just an injectable. The ones you find now that are heavily handed out are just the nasal ones where you just put it in the nose and it just sprays up. Well, I do know all the science to it. I'm blanking out on it.
It's all good.
But it basically blocks out the opiate receptors, and it kind of brings your body back from shutting down.
Forgive me. The only experience I have with it, and so much of what I talk about is through movies or television, right? Is it kind of the similar effect, or is it completely off of like Pulp Fiction when John Travolta brought Uma Thurman back kind of thing?
Oh, you come back really hard. And when we teach people to use it and stuff, it's really important to give it to them, back away, set them on their side. But a lot of people, when they come back to it, they're very unaware of what's going on. They usually come out in a very aggressive manner. And then usually you'll get pretty sick right after. Hmm. So it's definitely important to have RIMSA or somebody on the way to help kind of counteract it. Because once you use it, you can bring somebody back, but that the effects of that will wear off. It doesn't remove the amount of opiates that are in the system. And for some people, like myself, I use the very large amount of opiates. And sometimes, you know, you can bring somebody back with Narcan, but when that wears off, the amount of opiates in their system can put them right back into overdose. Mm. So it's just important to make sure they do get the medical help after.
Man, oh man, there's so many questions that I could ask, and I want to have you both back on only because we're about out of time, but I want to make sure that we mention the ways to get a hold of Wake Up Nevada, and the easiest one is wakeupnv.org. You can go to their website and you can read Darcy's story, the story of Darcy's daughter. There's pages about information on opioid abuse in the country. And for Washoe County. And again, this is a big issue in Washoe County right now, because we're nearly triple the national average in deaths from opiate abuse. So if you need help, if you know somebody that needs help, please reach out, wakeupnv.org. Any parting words, either of you?
I just really appreciate you having us on, letting us share our story.
Yeah. Thank you for having this on. And, I totally agree that I think sharing your story is the best prevention.
Well, I wish you both continued health. Thank you so much for joining us this morning. Again, the website, wakeupnv.org. Darcy Patterson, Austin Pollard, thank you so much for joining us this morning.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to In Depth. To have your nonprofit organization featured, please email psa@lotusradio.com.